Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Josh Miller in just a few moments. But first of all, our play-by-play call of the day. The call of a lifetime for Dan Munson on the Clemson Radio Network, courtesy of Learfield. The game winner. From Deshaun Watson.
First and goal at the two. Empty backfield. Watson goes shotgun. Ball on the left hash. Wide side of the field to the right. Watson takes a snap. Rolls right. Looks into the end zone. Hunter and Bo caught it. Touchdown. 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 With a second left. Watson hits Renfro. And Clemson grabs a 34-31 lead and is 1 second away from the second national championship in school history. Clemson will go to victory formation with 1 second left, up 35-31. Deshaun Watson checks up under center, takes a snap, goes for a knee, and there it is! Clemson paints the college football world orange here in 2016.
Don Munson with the call of a lifetime on the Clemson Radio Network, courtesy of Learfield last night. What a great thrill that had to be for him to call that game, especially the way it played out. Very pleased to bring in former Steelers punter, now with 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, Josh Miller. Josh, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on board.
All right. Kansas City, it might be an ice storm on Sunday. So take us through what it was like for you in conditions, what you would do pregame that you thought could make a difference in a game in terms of preparation when you get into situations like that.
I mean, Kansas City, there's nothing to prepare you for that. Elements are one thing. Crowd noise is another thing. Kansas City is a tough place to play on a beautiful day, let alone this time on the schedule. So I think just mentally strong, knowing, believing in one another, that's all you can possibly do, because adversity, you play against a team that doesn't make too many mistakes regardless of where you are on the calendar.
And that's the key about Kansas City. They play very close to the vest, but it also means they're one play away from being beaten as well. How difficult is it to play a team that plays as mistake-free as Kansas City does?
It's tough because that's something that's a big ask. Then you look at the Steelers, they'll give you 9 penalties a game for 97 yards, but they make up for it because they have so much talent. Kansas City, they don't make any mistakes, and they're really good on special teams. I mean, and that's something that most teams kind of... Yeah, we practice it, but then you realize they only practice 5 minutes of it. Where Kansas City, they'll practice that for like a good 40 minutes of practice. They're great at that stuff. They have their starters on there. So every facet of the game, they're good at the stuff that's free. That's a well-coached team, and those are smart, smart guys playing those positions. And sometimes when you get a more talented team, you take it for granted.
Le'Veon Bell, the best run that Emmitt Smith had in his remarkable career over 7 games was 860 yards. Bell has 1,002 in this 7-game run. When you're watching him right now, Josh, as a running back, what are you seeing?
I see a kid that has no idea how good he is. If he did, he wouldn't have gotten the trouble to begin the season. I think he's getting it now. He has an unbelievable responsibility because there hasn't been someone this gifted in a while to come along. He's extremely talented. You could name 3 running backs, and you can combine them, and I think that gets Bell, including Emmitt Smith, including Sanders, and I don't know, give me a little bit of Bettis as well. He's such a talented kid. He'll lead the team in receiving behind, obviously, AB, and he makes it look effortless. You can line him up anywhere. He is to be that gifted, that young, it's a big ask, and I think he's slowly learning the responsibilities that come with it.
As you know, I work with Jack Ham on the Penn State Radio Network, and Jack has said to me many times that when he watches Bell, what impresses him, especially from the linebacking point of view, he runs routes like a wide receiver. He doesn't run them like a running back. Much more difficult does that make him as a cover out there because he has that gear that changes mentality from running back gear to wide receiver gear.
And he has that one thing that every defensive guy never has. No disrespect to him, but it's patience. He'll wait behind that O-line for what seems like an hour and then make his move. You talk to Foster, Pouncey, DeCastro, Villanueva, those guys on the line, and they sit there. We don't panic because we know the guy behind us isn't. Our blocks don't have to be perfect. He's going to wait till it is perfect. I mean, to have that much patience, and again, we talked earlier about at such a young age, you're watching something very, very good there. You just hope he can stay healthy and hope he can stay smart.
Why has Roethlisberger been better at home in the last couple of years than he has on the road?
That's a great question. It really is. It's one that I'm sure he doesn't have the answer to. I think from talking to some players, he has he feels he takes the team on his back, and he has to make plays on the road. The first thing you talk to, you're told every Saturday night before you go to bed, let's take the crowd out of the game. So early on, a game of momentum, you try to take the crowd out. So sometimes he tries to force the ball a little bit. He's guilty of doing that. He won't take the sack. He doesn't look at as if the punt is a good thing. It's okay to punt sometimes on the road. He tries to do too much too early, and when you get yourself in a hole, then you have to play catch-up. As to where at home, it doesn't seem to be that way.
Let's go defensively. What has been the difference in the Steeler defense the last month and a half compared to maybe the opening month and a half of the season?
Well, Keith Butler, defensive coordinator, has done a great job. Early on, it was more of a bend, don't break because Artie Burns being a rookie, Sean Adams, Davis being a rookie, our safety, and Javon Hargrave being a rookie, you can't really throw the book at these kids and say, okay, you're going to get a tremendous amount of responsibility right now. It had to take a couple games, a couple weeks, half the season, a little more than half the season, to kind of say, okay, I'm going to give you a little more to throw at them. They've done a great job. Once you get confidence in your cornerback and your safety and the two rookies there, you're able to throw more blitzes, show more looks, and get a little more complicated. And now they're just humming on all cylinders right now. And again, you get Stephon Tuitt back, has been a big plus. So it's more confidence, allows Keith Butler to kind of dive a little deeper into his bag of tricks.
If I were to have told you that there would be no Cam Hayward in this lineup a couple of months ago, would you have been surprised to have seen the level they played at?
Yeah, it's amazing, right? They say if you lose one of your sights, one of your senses, the other ones grow stronger. Cam, if you told me that, I would have said you're out of your mind. There's no way this team's going to be where they are. But as luck should have it, or you make your own luck, I guess, Shazier stayed healthy and learned how to play that linebacker position. There was a time where it didn't matter if you ran a 4-3. When you're locked up with a 300-pound guy, you're not going anywhere. Or if you get injured, you're not staying on the field. But Shazier's been playing a great game. Lawrence Timmons has been, had a shot of youth. And again, you take the Tuitt into the situation. His level of play has been great. Not to mention a blessing in disguise with James Harrison, and I don't know what the hell he's doing, but you hope he just continues doing it. He's been a great mentor for Bud Dupree, who's also emerged, who wasn't there last year towards the end of the season.
Yeah, that's made a big difference. Mentally, what does it take to play a playoff game as opposed to a regular season game? And then the next step, what does it take to play one on the road?
It takes everybody realizing the little things. You got to be good at the stuff that's free. The penalties, knowing your opponent, not trying to win the game in the first quarter, second quarter. It takes knowing what I have to do and doing that. That's what makes Coach Belichick so great, in my opinion. When I was there, I was blown away by these guys that didn't look like the greatest athletes in the world, and I watched them play. And I realize all they're doing is their own job. They don't try to do someone else's job because they're barely good enough to do their own job. So when you have a bunch of guys on the field that could barely do their own job, you're darn right they're going to do that, and that's it. And they play it as a team. I think that's what happens in playoff football, that guys that can play as a team. If you try to make one extra play, if you're on the edge and you get sucked inside because you tried to make a play and now you lost the edge and they're going for a touchdown, that's on you. You tried to help the team, but you actually hurt the team. Belichick teams and the good teams play as one.
many good coaches out there have some of the same common denominators. There's no question about that. When you were around Belichick, what did you notice that was maybe just a little bit different that sometimes was a separator for him?
I never really thought a coach could win a game for you until I went to New England. Then I realized a great coach could win two just by what he sees from film. He's able to take away the other team's greatest strength, and he's willing to lose the game if they can somehow figure out how to adapt and move on. So what he sees from film, I've never seen anyone watch film. He's just such a smart – he's a smart coach. He's not afraid to hold on – he's not afraid to cut players when they're past their prime. A lot of coaches develop relationships. He'll cut his mother if he found a better one. I kid you not. He's that type of guy. He just knows when – someone's done playing ball. He knows where they're best situated on the field. He has a lot of faults now, but football, I'll tell you, he can win two games a year easily just by what he sees on film and game planning.
And that's what I've always said about the Patriots. They seem to understand shelf life better than anybody in the National Football League. Fair enough.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, I look at Mike Vrabel, who had 4 years left. At a different level, so he got rid of him. Teddy Bruschi, same thing. I mean, it doesn't matter. Willie McGinnis, just guys, Randy Moss, I can go on of guys that, they have three more years left. Nope, we're going to get rid of them now. Just because we have someone else and the trades, and if I can get another draft pick. I mean, this guy, every year he'll have 14 draft picks to play with just because he moves pieces around. Or he's just a very astute of the game that I've never seen another coach be able to just make anticipate moves like that in players. He'll see a guy playing for a Division II school that no one else will see, but you know what? On my offense, I need someone that can do that. I'll take him. And it's amazing to watch him do that. I watched him one time fire a scout. This is a great story. So the scout came to him and said, hey, Minnesota just got rid of us. I forgot the name, so-and-so. He runs a 4-3. We need him. Belichick looked at him and said, you know what? I don't know if we need you anymore. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, our field is muddy and dirty during playoff year. What's 4-3 going to do for us there? And the guy just looked at him and said, and that was it. And then 2 weeks later, he was nowhere to be found. So it's interesting. And I can't say it was because of that, but I truly believe it was saying, hey, this guy doesn't think the way I think. I'm getting rid of him. But it was amazing. Just the minute he had great news about this guy got released, we need him. He pointed out, saying, hey, 4-3 speed indoors is wonderful. We don't play indoors come postseason.
Yeah, exactly. Now, look, you made big punts at big moments, especially, for example, in the Super Bowl. You did it, knocked the big punts that made a big difference in that. Did you see a difference in Belichick at all from a regular season to a postseason game, or was he always the same?
He's always the same. I mean, he'll tell you something again. So, it'll be one of those things where you win a Super Bowl 1 year. Next year comes, the team gets together after the draft. First time the team is really meeting the draft picks. He'll say, Johnson, stand up. He'll be like, yes, coach, first round pick. How many touchdowns did you have for us last year? Well, I had none, coach. Okay, sit down. Phillips, stand up. How many tackles did you have? Second round pick. Well, I had no tackles, coach. That's right. So we won a Super Bowl without you, yes? That's the message he sends there. Brady, we'll watch a game with Brady. Brady will have a terrible game. He's like, hey, Tom, listen, if I was in a coma for 20 years and I woke up and I woke up today and I watched the football game, I'd say, this quarterback stinks. You didn't do this, you didn't do that, this, that. I mean, he goes after everybody. He'll make you laugh, which is a great gift, right? You get to put someone down and make him laugh at the same time. That's his personality. He treats everybody the same. Some coaches, that had open-door policies. That's wonderful, but you had no idea where the hell their door was. His open-door policy, you knew exactly where it was, and you're always welcomed in there.
One final question. Two more questions. I lied. Sorry about that. One is, you were around Brady firsthand and saw every day between prep and game. What amazed you about him?
He was, no matter all the success that he's had, he was the first one, no matter how early I tried to get there, just to beat him there, he was the first one at the complex, which blew me away. The second thing was, to this day, he'll remember my wife's name and my kid's name, and then look me in the eyes as he's talking to me. Third thing was, at the Super Bowl, we all take a knee before we go out there. We have guys pacing back and forth, guys throwing up. We had one guy get three stitches with a butter knife in the morning because he was just amped. We're looking around, and Belichick's like, where's Brady? And we look at his locker, he's sound asleep, leaning against his locker. So the guy's pretty cool all the way around. And, you know, again, you're very fortunate sometimes with the hand that you're dealt, but you also sometimes make your own luck, and that's Brady.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, all of us do remember his wife's first name. So,
indeed.
Just so you know. Finally, you do a great job breaking down games. It's, you know, it's why you've got the show you have. So when you look at Kansas City, Pittsburgh, just on the final question, give us the checklist of what people need to be watching for Sunday.
I'd say special teams. Special teams has been really bad for Pittsburgh as far as coverage goes, and you know, just the coverage teams, and really they let themselves open for some fake stuff. But as far as offensively, Alex Smith is a really good quarterback. He flies under the radar. You'll watch him, like, wow, I didn't know he had that throw, or wow, I didn't know he can still run like that. But the biggest strength for the Steelers is going to be if they can get out by two scores. Kansas City's a running team. They can't score quickly, and Alex, as good as he is, he's not a quarterback that you can throw on his back and kind of march down the field like some of the guys you know that can throw the ball all over the place. The key of the game is going to be able to run on KC, stop them in their running game, but get up by a couple of scores and try to let Smith try to throw on them to get him back in the game. That's when the Steelers will pin their ears back.
Excellent pro career and now a really good career in broadcasting as well. Josh, thanks so much for the time. It was great to have you on the show.
No, it's my pleasure. And again, thank you so much. Anytime.
Josh Miller joining us, former Steeler punter, among other places along the line, now at 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, where he does a great job talking about all sports, but in particular, obviously, the NFL and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Josh Miller, great to have him on the show today. Talk about the Steelers, great career. Aren't many guys that won both a Grey Cup and a Super Bowl championship. Do you know he won the Grey Cup?
What team was he on?
The Baltimore Stallions when the CFL ventured into America. How about that? So he won a Grey Cup and he won a Super Bowl. Not bad. Should have asked him which one he cherished more. I don't think a lot of people know he was in the Canadian Football League.
I completely forgot about that. I also forgot about, that they migrated a few teams down south. That didn't last too long.
No. I think it was like, I want to say Sacramento, San Antonio, Baltimore, Shamokin Dam, something. Well, great to have everybody on board here today. Neil Coulong, final half hour. And we'll talk more about these Steelers. We got a lot going on. We got Mark Vandermeer coming on later this week, the play-by-play voice of the Texans. Mike Conti from the Falcons Radio Network is going to join us. So, we got a lot going on leading into a big playoff weekend. Huge playoff weekend.
And your longtime friend, Paul Alexander, on Friday.
Yes, exactly right. Looking forward to hearing from Paulie again. He and I go back, my goodness, 33, 34 years, something like that. Kind of remarkable, actually, if you think about that. Wow. But he'll be on the show as well, and then we will... talk about the Steelers and the big weekend coming up. They've got the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a hard place to play. Arrowhead Stadium's a tough place to play. There's supposed to be an ice storm on Sunday. That's not great.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day. Well, Dabo Swinney last night went after Colin Cowherd of Fox. Why? Because evidently back in October or November, he evidently referred to Clemson as a fraud. I am all for expressing your opinions. And I talk to my class about this all the time. Feel free to express your opinions. Back them up with some facts. I said, but I've always tell them, though, to stay away from going overboard with adjectives. And calling a team a fraud that keeps winning. And for whatever reason, it obviously stuck with Dabo Swinney. Because he not only remembered it, he talked about it chapter and verse. So, it's one thing to say, I don't think Clemson can win it, and here are the reasons why. Referring to them as a fraud, I think, takes it a step too far. That's just done for pure ratings. And I don't think you do this job to me all the time just for pure ratings. That's just me. We all have our... Yeah, we all have our ways of doing it. So, okay. Great to have you with us on the show today. Neil Coulong joins us. Neil, I just had Josh Miller on the show, and I asked him about the ice storm that is forecast for Kansas City on Sunday. We'll see if it comes to fruition or not. But what are some of the factors that come into play because of the potential conditions in Kansas City in your mind?
I think that the styles of it would be the primary issue. It would be interesting to see how either team would respond to that. I mean, the Steelers are running the ball at a very impressive level over the last eight games, all of which have been wins for them. And that's kind of their bread and butter. And the Chiefs aren't a team that consistently stops the run all that well, although I suspect some of that is due to the fact that they have a very good pass rush and a good secondary as well, and teams would aim to run the ball a little bit more against them than they probably want to pass. They play closer games as well, so that kind of bears out in their statistics. So I would think just on paper, the Steelers would probably be less inhibited by that than the Chiefs would. The Chiefs are a decent rushing team, not a great one, but I think ultimately we can look last week at what the Steelers are going to kind of want to do. They're really going to want to focus on that running game, weather elements aside, and try not to put their quarterback into too many long passing situations. Keep the chains moving, get ahead on early downs. And they've been doing that very well. I know that's a very basic thing, but you certainly can't fault the formula right now at this point in the season. It's gotten them where they are. And I think weather aside, they're going to run the ball. If it's 75 and sunny, or if it's 12 and icy, they're going to get the ball to Le'Veon Bell.
And let's talk about Bell for a moment, because obviously he has come down the stretch. Emmitt Smith, the best seven-game stretch he ever had in his great, great career, I think was something like 862 yards. Bell in his seven-game stretch has gained 1,002 yards rushing. What have you seen in the patience and his vision that have made such a big difference for him?
He's been almost freakish. It almost looks like a video game. You see him behind the line of scrimmage. It's like he's just sitting around with a dart waiting to throw it at the appropriate spot whenever it is he determines that spot is available. And you just haven't seen really at any point any kind of running back that's able to do that. And while Bell, I say, and rightly so to some degree, gets a lot of credit for the patience and vision that he has, he's able to exploit smaller cracks up front the way that they are. What we're looking at is the fact that he's not even coming close to getting hit in the backfield. There's nobody on him. More than anything, he's able to do what he's doing because he has the room to do it. So it kind of, lends to the belief that probably, other running backs might be crazy enough to try that kind of style if they had that kind of blocking up front. The offensive line has been above and beyond anything I think we've seen of them over the last couple of years. And that says a lot because it's a pretty good group 2 years ago. I think they fell off a little bit last year. But overall, they've done a fantastic job. And all of this said, we're ignoring the fact that there were two 50-yard touchdown passes in the first two drives against a Dolphins team that really put the screws to them earlier this season. The offense has found a new definition of itself. And I think that more than anything speaks to the true talent of an offense. They can throw the ball, they can run the ball, and they do all these things when they have to. They're able to orchestrate the right kind of game plan to go up against whoever they're playing. And running the ball against Miami is something they probably would have wanted to do just to try to avoid their pass rush a little bit. And even with the secondary that was as banged up as theirs was going into that game, they wanted to run the ball. They committed to it, and they did an excellent job.
No question about that. Now let's get to, obviously, the Roethlisberger situation. You're watching it play out. Were you surprised? I mean, I wasn't surprised he was in the handoff. I have no problem with that. Were you surprised they wanted to throw?
Well, here's the way that I would see it. If I'm a coach, if he's going to be out there, he needs to be able to run everything. Otherwise, why is he in there? You know, yep. If you're conceding the game at that point, just kneel on it and punt then. If you're not going to play competitively, he shouldn't be in the game at all. So the fact that he threw on 3rd and 8, it isn't so much of a surprise. The fact that he was in the game at that point, I could see that going either way. Mike Tomlin owned up to the decision today to keep him in the game. I think it's something they'll definitely not do again in the future. But, you know, if you want to get all Belichick on, and you remember back in 2007 when they were just running teams out of the building, he's still throwing the ball when he's up 30 points, you know, late in the fourth quarter. And his explanation was, well, you never know. You know, you can get two onside kicks in a row and list out this, you know, crazy string of events that would have needed to happen. In this case, 3 touchdowns at that point in the game. I think there was like, what, 12, 11 minutes left, something like that. And it's a very long shot, but I could see that last drive why you might have wanted to keep him in there. However, with the way the defense was playing at that point and the fact that Le'Veon Bell wasn't in the game anyway, I don't see why Roethlisberger should have been in there, and Tomlin admitted as much today. So overall, I think everyone's going to see it as a mistake, but I don't think it's as wanton and reckless as many fans feel that it was. And it's also an opportunity for Ben to kind of, you know, play the wounded knee thing that he often does with the opposing team, kind of send a little message to them that, hey, you know what? Yeah, I don't know how good I am this week. We'll see what happens. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yet, the question of how good am I this week comes into play, because why is it that his road persona is not the same as his home persona of late?
That's just, it's crazy. It really is. He is a very different player on the road. And I would imagine, this is just my, you know, useless 2 cents, but I would imagine it has something to do just with your rhythm and schedule. One thing I know for sure for the rest of Ben Roethlisberger's career, if he played at home the previous week and he's playing at home again the next week, I'm not betting against him ever, against anybody. When he gets comfortable, when that offense gets comfortable, they've shredded teams in that second of a back-to-back home, you know, a home and home stand. Him playing at home and doing well and then going on the road, though, has seen some pretty disastrous results. And it's not necessarily just him, but there clearly is something that's off with the Steelers, particularly on the offensive side of the ball when they go on the road. And the only thing that you can really think to attribute it to is just the fact that they're out of their comfort zone. And typically, when they play their worst, it's the first road game after a home game or even a string of home games. So there's some concern from the Steelers' perspective leading into this game. It's almost like the quarterback who started his legacy as being a road warrior, you know, Roethlisberger led the team in 2005 with 4 straight road games, or at least 4 games outside of Heinz Field. Now you really have to wonder if it's going to come down to that. And this isn't a bad Chiefs team either, which has also been a problem for the team. Tend to play down to lesser competition on the road. They're playing a good football team. So I don't know. We're going to have to find out, but that's going to be the offseason if he doesn't play well. I guarantee it.
Neil, what has allowed the Steeler defense over the last 7 weeks to now round into a group that a lot of people feel is extremely reliable now?
I think they found a way to get run out of their defensive line without Cam Hayward, which I thought it was a fatal blow when he went down earlier in the season just because of the lack of depth on defense. They've really seen the younger players that they've been plugging in step up. Sean Davis in particular, I think, is better and better every game. He looks like a formidable player now versus where he was at the beginning of the year, when I think a lot of the mistakes that he was making, Artie Burns was making, that really held the team down. On top of that, you're getting consistent not just performance, but presence on the field from Ryan Shazier. He's played very well, probably their best defensive player over the last couple weeks. He's really making an impact. Lawrence Timmons has found a way to kind of turn the clock back a little bit, and he's playing very well. And it, perhaps more than anything, though, they found the pairing of outside linebackers that they've wanted. I think Bud Dupree and James Harrison have both done a pretty good job in solidifying the position, whereas it was kind of a negative mark earlier this season. We saw Jarvis Jones out there or Arthur Motes. The position just didn't produce as well. And I think with that, all together, it's unlocked everything. So a unit can play better as the sum of its whole as opposed to the sum of its parts. And you have to give the Steelers credit for that. They've done a great job kind of staying patient and keeping everything together in what was a pretty down point in the season. They were 4-5 at one point.
What does the combination of Davis and Burns mean to the secondary now?
I think it's getting a little bit more positive, definitely Davis more than Burns. I mean, Burns still had some technique issues that we're seeing, but he's tackling way better than he was. They definitely got that message across from where he was earlier in the season. Technique aside, though, more than anything, he's a long, tall cornerback with great athleticism. So with that, you hope he irons some technique kinds of things out, but he's still going to be able to match up with guys. And if he's playing fundamentally strong, if he's tackling, it's going to be a little bit harder to beat him. He looks a bit more like Ross Cockrell now, where Cockrell was when he first came in with the Steelers. You could see potential. You could see some good things that he's doing. He makes a play or two here and there, but he's still making a few mistakes. Those mistakes got less and less as the season went on with Cockrell. I think Burns is really just exploiting the experience that he's been given. And with that, you're seeing a much stronger secondary than we've seen in Pittsburgh the last couple of years. They haven't been making nearly as many mistakes lately that they were in the beginning. And that's a pretty big surprise.
Kansas City is a team that, to me, plays it so close to the vest that it's a great system for them to win, because that's their winning formula. But I always feel like they're one big play away from losing it, too. So how do you view Kansas City?
Kansas City is such a well-balanced and well-coached team. It's really hard to see a lot of fundamental flaws with them. And I understand, Andy Reid can kind of be seen as a joke, and he takes a good amount of criticism from his time in Philadelphia as well as his time in Kansas City. And his teams aren't exactly, joyous to watch. They have a very frustrating offense to watch. You have a quarterback that really is just kind of the master of the dink and dunk.
Yep.
They don't really go for a whole lot down the field. They're a very anti-modern football team. Alex Smith, he frustrates me to watch. I'd go nuts if I had to root for Alex Smith. He's a very talented player. He's a very smart player, but his style is just so boring to watch. It makes you wonder how much frustration comes from the success that they have as an offensive unit. And he leads them very well. More than anything, what the most frustrating part of him is, he just doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't turn the ball over. He does very, very well. I say all that remembering that the shellacking the Steelers put on him, and it was largely because they got to him and forced him into a couple rare mistakes. He hasn't made a whole lot of mistakes against the Steelers the last couple years they've played, and it seems like they've gotten them once a season now. But top to bottom, I mean, the team really is run by Alex Smith. He's an icy kind of competitor. He's a guy that he's going to go out and probably get 300 yards on probably 30 completions if they need him to. That can be tough to beat, even if it's field goal after field goal, which has been kind of a symptom of the Chiefs' offense this season. They haven't put the ball in the end zone probably as much as they should have, considering how many yards they have. But overall, defensively, they're an excellent unit. I think they've given up less than 19 points a game. Mm-hmm. Since the Steelers beat the tar out of them, back early in the season. And that was really kind of a buzzsaw game for them. I mean, the Steelers came off a real bad loss at Philadelphia. They're playing at home in prime time. It's tough to beat the Steelers offense at home in a prime time game, especially early in the season. I definitely don't think the Steelers were 30 points better than the Chiefs or whatever it was. And we're going to find that out on Sunday. I would imagine this is probably going to be a lower scoring game. I think the Chiefs can do a lot up front to disrupt what the Steelers are doing offensively. That makes it tough. I think this is going to be the best game of the weekend.
Agreed. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate your time as always.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us on the show. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us as we count it down here for you. Still plenty more to come in the shows this week, including Mike Connie from the Falcons Radio Network tomorrow, Mark Vandermeer, Texans Radio Network, the play-by-play voice. In fact, the only play-by-play voice the Houston Texans have ever had. And you know where Mark began his career?
Not too far from you.
Here.
You betcha.
I remember that we had a split among radio stations in State College as to who was doing Lady Lion basketball. And Mark was doing the Lady Lion basketball games. And so they had to make a choice when they decided to go with a Lady Lion network as to who they would go with. And, and they made a great choice. Jerry Fisher does a great, great job. And I remember Mark came up to me and he was disappointed. I said, Mark, I said, I just got a gut feeling you're destined for big things. He left here and went to Central Michigan. He then went from Central Michigan to UMass, from UMass to Miami, and then to the Texans. I would say that he's done very, very well in his career. Very well. He is a first-class guy. He is an outstanding broadcaster. I thought he was terrific when he was here. So we're going to have him on the show later in the week, and then Paul Alexander later in the week. We have a lot going on here.
Adam Amin tomorrow.
Adam Amin coming up tomorrow. He just worked last night's championship game from the sideline. It's an interesting viewpoint as to where he was last night. So Adam Amin tomorrow. So we have a lot of people on this week. It's supposed to be a bye week. I'm supposed to have my feet up doing nothing. What's your problem?
Sorry.
My bye week. What are you doing?
Since you're home for at least more than 28 hours this week,
I know.
They would just fill the show up.
I mean, Thursday was the only day I was home last week, and even then I got home at 3:30 in the morning. Like, okay. And then I was out of the house at 7:30 the next morning because I had to go to Philadelphia, and then we did the shows in Philadelphia on Friday. So I'm home for 2 weeks, and the only area that I'm bothered right now is that they keep asking when I'm leaving again. I don't know what that means. How long are you staying? What? What do you mean how long we're staying? How long are you staying? Just wondering. Great. Our thanks to Josh Miller and Neil Coulong for being on the show today. and Nathan Davis, the basketball coach of Bucknell. Bucknell tomorrow night, big one with Lehigh at Soika at 7. Doug Birdsong on Eagle 107 as the call tomorrow night, but hopefully you can get out to the game tomorrow night. Bucknell is 4-0 in the Patriot. They are 5-1 overall at Soika so far this year. Men's basketball team at Penn State back in action on Saturday at noon when they take on Minnesota. Minnesota has Michigan State tomorrow night. And you know what's really weird about that? This will be the fifth conference game for Minnesota this year. Tomorrow night will be their second game with Michigan State. It used to be where I understood the Big Ten schedule before in football and basketball. One of these days, I'm going to have to pull Mark Rudner aside just to ask. Like, I don't what I knew before, and what I know now. There's no rhyme or reason to it, and there has to be some logic to it. And Mark knows it better than anybody. And I have a lot of respect for Mark Rudner, not a little. I have a lot of respect for Mark Rudner. All right, that wraps it up for today. Our thanks to Josh Miller, former Steelers punter, now on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, for joining us today. Neil Coulong, USA Today, joining us as well. And to head basketball coach Nathan Davis. Tomorrow, Mike Conney from the Falcons Radio Network to preview the Falcons of the Seahawks, and the outstanding Adam Amin from ESPN. That's tomorrow, 3 to 5, all brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK, the home of the suit.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.